This is Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the free weekly financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Macro Voices is all about the brightest minds in the world of finance and macroeconomics telling it like it is, bullish or bearish, no holds barred. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Townsend and Patrick Serezna.
Macro Voices episode 148 was recorded on January 3rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Happy New Year. Natural resource investing guru Marin Katusa will join me as this week's feature interview guest. Marin sees opportunity in energy, steel, and diamond mining shares, and will also discuss precious metals. Be sure to stay tuned after the feature interview when Patrick and I will continue extended equity market coverage, including a post-game chart book.
And I'm Patrick Serezna. Now, Eric, the S&P 500 has been on a roller coaster ride for the last 2 weeks. We ended that interview with Daniel Want back on the 20th of December. And since then, the S&P 500, we had that Christmas Eve massacre to the downside where the S&P hit down towards 2300. And then we've had an epic bounce rally on the other side. What's your take on all of this? What's your thinking on the S&P here?
Well, I'm definitely persuaded that the cyclical bear market has begun, and I think that Christmas Eve massacre was a case of people taking advantage of thin liquidity and running stops. So it did create a very significant low. I keep wanting to say, okay, look, Patrick, the short-term low is in. We should expect a multi-month bounce now, and that doesn't mean to new highs. I think the bear market is on, but we're so oversold here, it's kind of time for a bounce. The thing is, at every turn, Patrick, each time we've said that, and we've said it a few times now on this program, the market surprised us and was weaker than we expected. So I really feel like we've sold off an awful lot and that it's time for some kind of a bounce. Now, I don't think that that's a bounce to new all-time highs. I think it's a bounce and we'll eventually move lower. But I'll be surprised if we move immediately below 2300. I think we've got several weeks of bounce coming before we move much lower. Of course, I've said that a few times before and been proven wrong as the market proved weaker than we thought otherwise. As we'll get into in a few minutes, there's a lot of signals that are really telling us the economy has taken a turn for the worse.
All right, well, let's move on to the U.S. dollar. Now, earlier in the week, we had a dollar index trading below the 96 level, where we got above there the other day. Has this changed anything in your mind? Is the rally in jeopardy in the dollar?
No, I don't think that the rally is in jeopardy, but it's pretty clear that we're in an extended consolidation pattern, and I'm not sure how long that's going to last. We need a daily close above 97, not 96, but 97. And as we're speaking now on Thursday afternoon, we're actually below 96, a high 95 handle. So, you know, we need to see some significant strength before it's time to really say the rally is on again. But the dollar bears that are saying, oh, it's a going to crash any day now. I just don't see that case.
Eric, moving on to crude oil. The oil seems to be mustering up some sort of a bounce. I mean, we traded as almost down to the 42 handle and since have been rallying. What's your take here? Does it still have more to go on the downside?
I think it probably does, but there's a good argument that a bottom could be in. First of all, inventory is delayed until Friday this week, so we don't have the benefit of inventory numbers to share with you. If I look at the chart, you know, there's a double pipe bottom on the daily chart. 42 is a low enough number that could be it. Frankly, I doubt it, and it's more of a gut feeling than anything else. I think we've got a lot of uncertainty in this market. We don't know what's going to happen next with Saudi Arabia. We don't know what's going to happen with China. So the news action could definitely influence it in either direction. It's quite possible that the bottom is in. I think that a move still lower is more likely, but we'll see what happens.
Eric, let's move on to gold because it continues to edge higher here. What's your take on what's happening in the gold markets?
Well, you said it, Patrick. It's edging higher, and it's surprising me by edging higher, but let's be clear. It's edging higher. It's not breaking out. It's not leaps and bounds higher. It's higher than I expected, and it's also no longer just about the inverse U.S. dollar trade. So something's going on here. I would definitely want to ask Marin Katusa. This is his specialty. But frankly, I'm still skeptical of this rally, and you know, I think it could have further to go here. But remember the 2008 pattern, whereas the economy started to turn, stocks sold off aggressively. Gold was up initially as a safety trade, but then gold sold off with everything else and hit a new low. And I still think that that's a very good possibility. I could be wrong. I definitely will admit to have been caught by surprise here. I didn't expect in the face of this much dollar strength to see gold continue to push higher, which it's done. But am I rushing in to buy it here? No, I'm waiting this out. If we make a decisive move above 1300, it's going to be really hard for me to explain what's going on. But am I buying it? No.
Let's move on to that 10-year Treasury yield. It fell below the 2.6 level today, a level you've described in the past as pretty important. What's coming next here in your mind in terms of yields?
Well, wow, Patrick. Holy cow. I mean, when we were speaking just a couple of weeks ago, we were eyeing 2.80 as the level that we had to see if that support was going to hold. I was talking about 2.60, saying, look, that's the longer-term downside target for where we could get to in yield. We need to watch that support level if we ever get to it. And over the holiday break, you know, whammo, we're already below it. So it's very clear. I think there's lots and lots of signs that this economy is definitely rolling over. Jeff Snyder had a fantastic piece on Zero Hedge today, which we have linked in your research roundup email, saying Eurodollar futures, and particularly the spread between Eurodollar futures at different points out in the curve, is also sending a very strong signal. So we're getting a lot of recession signals here. I am really looking forward to Macro Voices Live, getting Julian Brigden and Juliette DeClercq and Brent Johnson and all of the rest of our speakers together on stage, because I want to ask them what's going on and where this can go and where we're headed. I really don't have any firm opinion other than that I think this is surprising everyone with respect to how vigorously we're moving down in yield, much more quickly than I expected.
Eric, any updates in regards to Macro Voices Live in Vancouver now that you mentioned it?
Well, we're really looking forward to the event. I've been getting emails from the speakers. They're excited. I'm excited. Really looking forward to meeting more of our listeners. Again, it is the 19th. That's just a couple of weeks away. So be sure to get your tickets if you haven't already. They're available at macrovoices.com/live. You'll find all of the event details, including the detailed schedule there. A couple of people have asked us in email what the schedule is, and they don't realize the full schedule is on the website at macrovoices.com/live. Be sure to get there in time for the 6 p.m. reception on Friday night. You asked us in Toronto for more time to meet and socialize with the speakers, and we're giving it to you in the form of two receptions, both Friday and Saturday night, 6 to 9 p.m. on the top floor at the Hyatt. So be sure not to miss that, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Vancouver.
All right. Well, thanks for the update, Eric. Now, this week's featured interview guest is Katusa Research founder, Marin Katusa. Eric's interview with Marin is coming up as Macro Voices continues right here at macrovoices.com.
And now with this week's special guest, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Joining me next on the program is natural resource guru Marin Katusa. Now, as many of you know, Marin was our most requested guest speaker for Macro Voices Live. Unfortunately, we couldn't get him on the schedule because Marin is one of the sponsors of the Vancouver Natural Resource Conference, which starts the very next day and has a lot of responsibilities. The trade-off was we were able to get him on the show a couple of weeks ahead of time. So, Marin, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on the program today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Eric. Oh, it's a pleasure.
The first time that I interviewed you on this program, you described an opportunity to buy Nevsun on speculation because you thought it was a takeover target. And you became something of a rock star in the eyes of many of our listeners because that stock just shot up like 50% 2 days after your interview. But as much as that was a great call, and you deserve credit for that, by your own admission, the timing that it happened 2 days after you made that call was pure dumb luck. It was a stock that you and your subscribers have been watching for several months. months before that happened. So, Maren, I'm going to hold you accountable because the next time that you were interviewed on Macro Voices, you told us that you had just recommended a private placement in a uranium streaming company. And at the time, you were not able to tell us the name of the company out of respect for your paying subscribers, but you were very excited about it. So now that plenty of time has passed, I'm hoping that you can tell us the name of the company and also how has it performed since your recommendation? Because needless to say, the rest of the market has suffered pretty badly.
So the markets have been very volatile. The company that we specifically were referring to during your podcast was a company called Uranium Royalty Corp. And what I like about them is they're unique. They were the first in the world to do what they're doing. It's run by a very competent and, more importantly, invested management team. So when we got in at the same price as the insiders and management team at $1, the company is literally right now closing another financing at $1.50. So it's a 50% jump from where we're in at, and it's still very early days in the story. I do believe the company's going to do a lot more. And, you know, where is the uranium market now? Well, you know, in the last 12 months, uranium's up a little over 40%. But more importantly, the assets of this company, they're the largest shareholder of a UK-listed holder of uranium called Yellowcake, is up over 40%. And their streams are what I call in non-AK-47 nations, meaning relatively politically stable. Now, so after you invest in resources for a while, you'll find out there's no such thing as no risk. Every jurisdiction has some sort of risk. The question is how high is that risk? So Uranium Royalty Corp has done fantastic for myself and my subscribers thus far. Look, it's going to be volatile just like the markets, but thus far the management have exceeded my expectations. I do believe they'll continue to do that, and I think we'll do very, very well on that story. So we're up 50% in a market where most people are down.
Well, congratulations on that. It's fantastic that you're up so much considering the market overall. But that leads me to my next question, because the market overall is a serious concern. As we all know, natural resource companies tend to be fairly volatile to start with. A lot of people, myself included, think that we're headed toward weaker economic times, possibly into a recession in the next 12 to 18 months. So how do you manage a natural resources portfolio if you have a view that maybe the economy is going to get weaker? Do you hedge your longs with short positions, or do you just wait for the opportunity to buy when there's blood in the streets, or what's your strategy? How do you manage this?
That's a great question, and we've written extensively over the last 12 months how much I believe how volatile we're going to get, and I've talked about how oil is going to go down and how copper has downside. Now, I'm very bullish both on long-term prices for those and gold. But what we've been very fortunate in is I've kept emphasizing in 2018 how the U.S. dollar will outperform other currencies. So number one is you can't take advantage of market capitulation in any market, and I focus on the resources, is if you don't have cash. The other factor is if your currency is depreciated at a level compared to the U.S. dollar, you're also at a disadvantage. So we've been heavy U.S. dollar. We've been very happy with that. But I also have a strategy of being an alligator. And when it comes to investments in the resource sector, so what I mean by investment is something that pays a dividend, is the lowest cost quartile of producer, is in a jurisdiction that I'm comfortable, and not just going myself, but taking my family to, because, you know, I've been around the world. I put body armor to go to assets when I was younger. I've kind of figured out that those are more bull market phenomenons. When you really come to like the Warren Buffett style, you just want the bread and butter, lowest cost quartiles with a good balance sheet, and stay away from the debt. So I have got a strategy for the investments, and I never allow any one investment to make up more than 10% on my resource portfolio. Now for the speculations, I never allow my subscribers, and I talk about this and I really emphasize, never to put over 5% of your resource portfolio in any one speculation. And then the key is to reduce your risk. So that's where I'm very big on, you know, we were joking earlier about the Catoosa free ride, but the reality is you have to remind your subscribers to take profits, because especially in the resource market, my favorite thing is a portfolio full of warrants and free rides and a lot of cash. That's the best way to take advantage of a distressed sector.
I want to stay on that distressed sector subject because I think economically we probably haven't seen the worst yet. But when I look at oil specifically, it feels to me like a lot of this price slide has been driven by this whole Jamal Khashoggi murder fiasco, where obviously Saudi Arabia has embarrassed themselves to the point where it's very difficult for them to be aggressive in their policy. Is it time already to be thinking about buying oil, or is it something that we want to wait out? Do you think it still has a lot more downside, or are we seeing it starting to bottom here?
So I personally believe we're going to see it break 40. That's the U.S. WTI pricing. Now, a lot of people may not know this, but in other parts of the world, it's been under $20 per barrel in U.S. dollar equivalent prices. So that's places in the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, which is Alberta mainly in Canada. There's been times in the last 3 months where the gas has been negative, meaning the producing companies had to pay to get rid of their own gas. Like, think about that. So there's like a negative cost. That's actually happened in the oil patch. So I believe that the U.S. will significantly increase their oil production. They're the world's number one oil producer right now. And I think that's going to continue by at least another 500,000 barrels a day at the end of 2019. What will happen with Venezuela? A lot of people are expecting Venezuela to fall apart. I don't think they'll allow the production of oil to fall apart as much as the market expects, because that's its only generating cash flow asset is the oil. And then the question of OPEC, they came out and said, we're going to cut. Do you really believe OPEC? Can the countries actually stick to it? I doubt it. And then the Russians always increase their market share during a market pullback because of the nature of the producing assets. So I do believe, Eric, that oil will go lower, and that's music to my ears, because what I want to buy is big production at a huge discount. And I'm publishing on that today, where strong balance sheets that if oil goes below 30, their dividend is rock solid. That's what I want. And you can get in the market now companies with strong balance sheets paying an 8% yield that are down 50% over the last, say, 90 days. But nothing's really changed with the company other than market sentiment. That's how you take advantage of the oil markets.
And is it time now, or are you recommending buying oil companies that obviously are depressed dramatically in the last 90 days, or do you think that it's something we want to wait out in order to get to lower price targets?
So I have a tranche method. So we have actually today published our buy your first tranche, which is your first 25% of an investment. So that's 2.5% of the portfolio. And I said buy under $4 on this specific stock. It was 410. So, you know, I expect within the next 10, 15, 20 days that the price will hit, as I believe oil will come down a little bit. Oil had a little bit of a pop today, specifically today's January 2nd, mainly because of OPEC came out with some bullish, we're going to pull back and we're going to hold the markets. You know, there's only so much you can believe OPEC. And, you know, Eric, you and I have been doing this a long time. Go back to all of the comments OPEC have stated. Yes, it's done. Their comments have kind of propped the market in this last run, but I really think oil can pull back another 10% at least.
I agree with you on that. So for oil stocks, it sounds like you're starting to average in, but only at these prices are you just starting, and you're keeping a little bit of dry powder for even better buying opportunities on the horizon.
Correct. And I have a specific buy under. So we're very disciplined in our style. We call it the way of the alligator. You know, an alligator just sits back, and when it's time, he pounces. It's more like a predator mentality. That's where I am in these markets. I'm staying away from high-risk juniors. I want to buy value at a significant discount where it would cost the management teams of these companies more to build these assets than they're trading for in the market today. And you got all of that execution risk out of the market because they're producing over 100,000 barrels a day. So the stock prices are liquid. It doesn't trade by appointment. That's where I want to be in this market.
And do you publish what all of your price targets are for future tranches, or do you wait out the market and just see where it takes us over time?
No, I actually have targets. So for this specific oil target, I said, look, I think this is going to bounce within the next 3 to 6 months by about 25%. And at that point, we're either going to close the position or at a minimum take a free ride. It's just, you know, with an 8% dividend, that's pretty juicy. But I put a specific how to buy and when I think we'll sell the target.
Now, I know that you are also following the steel sector, and I should probably disclose, in the interest of full disclosure, that I am a subscriber to your newsletter myself, so I know some of what you're writing about. Help us understand why you would be looking at steel. A lot of people think a recession is coming. Historically, you know, people kind of associate steel and copper as things you buy at the very bottom of the recession, not when we're just maybe coming into one. So why are you looking already at these sectors?
Great question. Now, to be a contrarian, you know, you truly have to be a contrarian. Everyone likes to think they're a contrarian, but you have to have a outward thinking mentality. So if you look at what's going on with the American and Chinese tariff situation, who are the victims unintentionally? Well, the non-U.S. producers of steel. So when you start going through the list of global steel producers, you see that many of them have incredible amounts of debt that they've put on, because to build a steel mill is not cheap. So companies have billions and billions of debt, where they're two or three times their debt is what their market cap is. But when the tariffs came in, almost across the board, the steel producers have been down 25, 30, 40, 55% down. And yet the lowest cost quartile producers, who have no debt on their balance sheet, have gone down just as much as the worst run steel companies in the world. And you sit there and go, okay, let's dig down a little deeper. So we see the market sentiment so negative on steel producers, and yet why are they trading the way they are? But let's actually look at steel prices. They're still holding very strong. And what type of steel are they producing? Hot rolled, cold rolled, you know, there's different forms of steel, different areas, different cost structures. And what we've started with is your first tranche, so your first 25% of your desired position, because these positions sometimes take 12 months to buy, the way I do this. It's not like, okay, I've got 200 grand and I want to buy all the stock today. That's the wrong way of buying resource stocks. First, you have to educate yourself, understand the sector, understand the company, get familiar with the way the stock trades, and then start building your different tranches. And I think that some of these companies, specifically one that I'm in at the same price as my subscribers, is significantly oversold. It's the lowest cost producer in North America, has no debt, pays a strong dividend. I'm comfortable with that type of position, but I'm also only in on my first tranche. So it'll take me about 12 or 18 months to build my full tranche position.
You know, that phenomenon you just described never ceases to amaze me, the way that the industry will look at something and say, okay, steel producers, really heavy debt sector, sell them. They're going to be in trouble because of their debt load. And they're selling the whole sector without regard to which company has a lot of debt and which doesn't. And it happens in all industries. It's really amazing how the industry tends to just look at a sector as being weak for some reason and then sell the companies that are weak for that reason and sell the companies that are not really weak for that reason altogether in a batch. It's kind of like racial discrimination for stocks. It's an amazing phenomenon. I want to move on to another sector I know you've been looking at, which is diamond mining. Why diamonds, especially as we think maybe coming into a recession? You know, it's not time for people to be spending a whole lot of extra spare money they don't know what to do with on luxury items like jewelry. So why diamond mining at a time like this?
Well, again, it's a contrary bet. So when people think about diamonds, what do they think about? They think about blood diamonds. They think about man-made diamonds, and a lot of that is true. So first of all, if you're going to look at a diamond company, stay away from what I call small carats production, and stay away from dirty diamonds, obviously. You know, and those are in, like, a blood diamond comes from an AK-47 nation, the way I call it. So again, you look at the diamond companies, because of the threat of man-made diamonds, and more specifically, what's been called Lightbox, which is owned by De Beers, who's the world's largest producer in dollar volume. Largest producer of diamonds, actually, the Russians with Alrosa. But De Beers has been involved in mining for over 100 years. Man-made diamonds first started in the 50s. It's gotten to the point where De Beers is able to make a small man-made sub-1-carat diamond for about $800. Now, I don't want to be competing with that. But there's an old saying, buy bonds, wear diamonds. And yet, when you look at the plus 10-carat diamonds, the big ones, they're actually going up in value year over year because of the concentrated wealth. If you look at the auctions for the big diamonds. So you want to stay in the highest quartile of value, but the lowest quartile of cost in a built mine. So I'm staying away from any exploration of diamond. I have no interest in high risk. I'm coming in now and buying asset at a significant discount to where it traded even 6 to 12 months ago. That is a low-cost producer and essentially has a monopoly in the big diamonds, which have a huge value. Like the price of diamonds are exponential as they get bigger. That's a lot of people don't understand the diamond pricing. But people talk about buying gold for value as a safe haven. Well, with the uber rich, you actually buy big diamonds because where are you going to store all that gold? So the big diamonds has its own market. It's a very niche market, but yet the company I'm talking about pays an incredible dividend of over 7%, has no debt, and it's the Ferrari of the diamond world. So that's another alligator concept of buying things that are unloved for the wrong reason. And you wouldn't believe how many analysts, Eric, have talked about the company and combined it with the low carat producers, like the small carats, the sub 2-carat diamond producers. And I'm going, are these analysts morons? Like, do they not understand the profile of what this company produces? It's all about the big diamonds. And moving forward, I think those will trade at a premium, which actually in the market they are. And stay away from the small carat producers like Alrosa. They are the world's largest producer of diamonds, but they also produce those micro diamonds, which are going to be competing with man-made diamonds. I don't want to compete with man-made diamonds. I want to cater to the uber rich, I call it, and that's the big diamond sector.
You mentioned gold a minute ago. I want to come back to that because something that you and I have agreed on in the past is we both feel that there is a very strong macroeconomic argument for the U.S. dollar to strengthen even further. And that's led both of us to agree that gold is probably going to face some serious headwinds. Well, we got the dollar part of that call right. The dollar has been strong just as we expected it to be. But look at this gold chart. It's really surprised me. It seems like gold is kind of changed its personality, and it's trading more as a safe haven asset as opposed to an anti-dollar trade. What do you think is driving the change, and has it changed your view on gold? Because last I spoke to you, you and I both were kind of, not necessarily bearish, but kind of meh on gold, and it's been up since then.
Yeah, it's up, but where it's really up is in the, so if you're a producer, let's say in Canada or Australia, I teased an article many months ago called The Commonwealth Takeover. When you're producing in a lower currency, such as even the Russians or Chinese are the world's largest producer of gold, a lot of people don't know that. But when you're producing in a weaker currency, such as the Canadian dollar or Aussie relative to the U.S. dollar, you know, it's touching now about $1,700 an ounce. So that's your Canadian cost relative. So where I think, will it go to $1,400, $1,500 in the near term? No. But for U.S. dollars, if these producers are in debt in U.S. dollars, which when you build a mine, it's always U.S. dollar debt. That's a lot of people don't know. When you build, if you try to buy a fleet of 30 big trucks from Komatsu or wherever, it's always in U.S. dollars or big shovels. The steel, the mills, the ball mills, the sag mills, it's always U.S. dollars. So it's priced in U.S. dollars. So it's held well. Has it really gone front page yet? No. Have the share prices of the senior producers done well relative to gold? No. So it's not done well enough to spill over into the producers area. And I don't see that happening in the next little while, near term, meaning next few months. I think gold will be very volatile, sub $1,300. I think it'll touch 1180. I think it'd easily break 1200, but I think it's range bound for the next few months.
And range bound for the next few months before a move in which direction, or don't know, or what's your perspective on what comes next?
So this is where I'm going to get more hate from not just your viewers, but also my viewers. There's almost this mentality that if you invest in the resource sector, you have to be a gold bug, or you have to cheer for higher prices. Look, I think gold goes lower. I think we'll see $1,180 gold before we see $1,400 gold.
And is that because of the dollar expectations or for another reason?
A few reasons. I believe the U.S. dollar, like you stated, I believe it will do well. I think the next few months it'll be bouncing around. It's just trying to find itself. But I think the next leg of the dollar is higher. Therefore, the producers in non-U.S. regions like Canada, Australia, go to Africa, Russia, they'll be able to produce more, meaning you can start processing your lower grades of gold, which may be at, you know, $1,600 Canadian equivalent gold, or $1,250, you can, but at $1,300, you could, but because of the FX reasons, that's one. Number two, there's no shortage of gold mines. I know a lot of people talk about peak gold. I actually don't buy that. What it is what price do you need gold to be? And everyone thinks in U.S. dollars on the cost, but if you go to enough mines that I've been to, if you can get non-U.S. dollar funding, so let's say a partner from the Chinese or the Russians, there'll be more supply come on. So I think in a few years, we'll see $1,750, $1,800, maybe even $2,000 gold, but not this year for sure.
Maren, I want to pick up on something you said a minute ago about gold, where you said, you know, almost everybody expects you that you have to be on the cheering squad for it. Something else I've noticed about your style, you know, a lot of people, they want to pick a really solid, and I'm talking about stock investing generally now. They want to pick a really solid company that has a future that they can believe in and buy and hold it for several years. Something I've noticed about your style is you very, very rarely hold positions for that long. So give us a little bit of perspective on what your strategy is, and is it that it's just Maren Kattus is different from other investors, or is it that the natural resource sector is different from other sectors in terms of how you have to approach it?
I think that's a really good question. I think the answer quickly is I think I'm very different than most commentators or writers in the sector, such that I'm a very large investor in the sector, so I've got significant skin in the game. Whereas many newsletter writers aren't actually allowed to buy any stocks, so they're more, you know, armchair analysts. And the second thing is I really do believe the resource sector is different than many other sectors. Now, I solely focus on the resource sector, but it's so cyclical, so volatile, that you have to be very active, and the absolute key is risk mitigation. There's a reason why my fund is one of the top funds over the last decade, and it's about risk mitigation. When the times are great, just think about this from a broad perspective. In 2017, in Q1, I was offered hundreds of millions of dollars to manage by very well-known names in the industry. And I said, this is ridiculous. A year and a half ago, when I made my big moves on Northern Dynasty and these other deals, those same individuals thought I was crazy. But the reason is they get all this capital allocated to them when things are good, and then it trickles down to the best money managers, and then they're almost forced to invest in the sector. The only way to truly be successful in the resource sector is to be actually a true contrarian. And to be a true contrarian, even if you find a stock that you really like, look at the one that we just did in December as our number one tax loss. We had a strategy. We thought it was a fantastic story. I had a very specific buy under this price, and in less than a month, it's up over, 40% and change, and today we published to take a Kattusa free ride at a minimum or close the position, because that's not really a realistic gain in 1 month. So if the market gives it to you, take it. And you have to have dry powder. You have to have cash on the side to take advantage of these markets, and that's something I've learned about doing this for almost 20 years is the guys who've made the biggest scores were the ones who were able to take advantage of the markets when no one else had cash. So you can't fall in love with these cyclical stories. Like, for example, everyone's talking about Kirkland Lake today, but the true asset of Kirkland Lake is a asset Fosterville, which was in a company called Newmarket. I wrote the first report on Newmarket, and it was the first thing I ever published under Kattusa Research. I bought 10% of the company. Doug Forster, who ran the company, the first meeting he took as the president of the company when he took over a company called Crocodile Gold was in my office in Vancouver. And I literally wrote up a 17-page report on it, still on my website, and saying, I'm going to be buying 10% of this company, and here's why. Now, that stock went from under a dollar to today to, it's like $35 a share today is Kirkland Lake. But at $2 and change, I had a double. So I sold half my position, and the rest was free. And I sold half my position to a guy named Eric Sprott, who's the chairman of the company that bought out that stock. And he's the chairman today of Kirkland Lake. So what I'm trying to get at is, okay, sure, I should, you know, in retrospect, if I held the whole position, but this game is about risk mitigation. So if I can have a free round or, you know, a free position like the one that we just took today on Sun Metals, this business is so cyclical, so risky, anything can happen. You try to just build your positions, reduce your cost base, and grow your net worth. It's kind of a boring strategy. You have to stay active, but it works. So stick with it.
Well, I think it's a very important commentary on this market sector is unlike a lot of other stock sectors. You got to be on top of this stuff. You can't just sit back and, you know, buy something and look at your portfolio again for the next time in 6 months and see how it's doing. You've got to be an active investor in order to speculate in the kind of stocks that you get involved with. But Maren, I want to come back to the question I asked you a minute ago about the way that you move into these positions in tranches where, you know, you start with your first quarter or your first third of the position. I've noticed from following your newsletter, you don't always get filled on all of those, or at least you haven't in the time that I've been reading your letter. Do you adjust your positions? In other words, if you've decided you're going to buy so much of a certain company, if you don't get your price, do you eventually move your limits up and buy it at a higher price? Or do you just pass and say, okay, if I couldn't get the price I wanted, then I'm going to pass on that trade and look for a different opportunity down the road?
So I'll share the two ones that you're talking about in the newsletter. The chairman of the company and the founder of the company is a very, very, very close friend of mine. And he calls me a very stubborn individual. He's like, just move your price up. And I said, I'm not, because I do believe that the market will pull back, meaning gold and silver prices, the spot prices for these will come down a little bit, and I'd rather be patient. And these are world-class companies run by great management teams, lowest cost producers, no debt on their balance sheets. But I've done this long enough that, look, if you're looking for a newsletter that you want seven stocks to buy today and put your whole portfolio into gold, I think that's wrong, and that's not my strategy, and I'm not the type of publication you should follow. My strategy is what I've been doing with my own money and my fund, and I'll put my track record in the resource sector up against anybody. And it's not the most sexy or entertaining newsletter, but this is how it's done properly. And in that one specific stock, look, it just took over another stock that has a lot of shareholders that have been locked up in the company. If the silver price pulls back a little bit, and those sellers now, they've been taken out by the bigger company, and they want to hit the bid, that's two extra events that will cause selling pressure, potentially. Doesn't mean it will, but potentially. So if I can pick the stock up for, say, 15 or 25% below where it's today, that's really good. But also, I missed it by 40 cents the last pullback in silver, which was almost, what, 60 days ago. So that's telling me that, you know what, just a little bit of a pullback in the market and that price will come back to me. So I'm fairly stubborn, and usually if you're patient enough, the market will come back to you. So I'm a big believer in don't chase stocks.
Well, certainly what you're doing is working, because your track record, as you say, is very well respected. And with some of the calls you've made just on this program, like Nevsun and Uranium Royalty Corp, you're certainly doing very well. Patrick has been trying to wrestle with your staff to get them to let us publish a current issue of one of your newsletters. And they've explained you just can't do that because your paying subscribers would be too upset if you did. But we have managed to get permission to publish the July issue of your newsletter, in which you made the argument for Uranium Royalty Corporation, so that our interested listeners can get a sense of how you do what you do. Now, it's probably already too late to buy that one because it's already up 50% from the time that you made that recommendation back in July. But just as a sample of the approach you take, we've got that linked in your Research Roundup email. So listeners, you'll find the download link there. Again, that's not a recommendation that you're making to buy it now, because it's already moved up dramatically. Patrick also persuaded your staff to repeat your deep discount offer, which you did for us before on Macro Voices. But before we cover that, I feel obliged to explain, this really is not for everyone. You have a fantastic reputation and a fantastic product, but frankly, it's not cheap. Regular price is $3,500 a year. So who is this actually a match for? How big of a natural resource portfolio does an investor need to have before a higher price tag newsletter like this makes sense?
I really believe that if you're an active investor that wants to, number one, educate themselves on how the resource sector really works. Number two, you want to get to the point where you're accredited. So if you're an accredited investor, it's a no-brainer for you. Like, look, just the December issue alone would pay for 5 years of the newsletter in profits. But really, this is not for day traders. This is not for someone that wants to just kind of have a stock pick and they don't care about anything else. This is really an education. We dig deep into the fundamentals of the stock. And then also, when I do my site visits, I bring my film crew. It's kind of like a documentary style. You get to watch me going underground or to the wellhead or to the copper mine, gold mine, whatever. The uranium facilities were one of the few people to get approval from Areva to go into the world's largest uranium facility. And then I bring my film crew, and they get to see how I interact with the management. They get the one-on-one interviews with the management team, the workers at site, just to get to see what I see when I go on site. So you get the written reports, you get these all the videos online, and the whole archive of what I've been writing for, you know, now 4 or 5 years. So it's all there online. But I really think that, you know, I started out as a teacher in math and physics. And what I try to write it for is that person who wants more. And I guess if you want more out of your finances, I've got a personal logo that is personal freedom through financial independence. And I guess anyone who wants that, my newsletter is for you.
Okay, again, with the caveat that it is for investors with a significant portfolio, because it you know, if you've only got $5,000, it doesn't make sense to spend half of it on a newsletter. So I just want to make sure that we're clear about that. We were able to knock you down quite a bit from the $3,500 regular subscription price to $1,995 with a 30-day money-back guarantee for Macro Voices listeners only. Listeners, you'll find the link to that special offer in your Research Roundup email, or you can just go to KatusaResearch.com/macrovoices. Marin, I know that you have specific stock recommendations for oil, steel, and diamonds that we were not able to mention in this interview out of respect for your paying subscribers. Patrick asked your staff to make up a report for Macro Voices listeners who subscribe to your letter detailing those four picks. So I guess that will be available to anyone who subscribes. We were going to get four. We're only getting three. So was that? I'm guessing that was Sun Metals, that by the time we could get it out, you're taking profits. So when we
discussed this, it was before Christmas. And first of all, we've never done this before where we've given a publication out. But, you know, I look at you and Patrick as kind of like Batman and Robin. I like you guys, so I only work with people I like. Number two, I love to put my stuff out there. And with that comes the good, the bad, and the ugly. You get people that love your stuff, then you just get trolls and haters, and I have fun with them. Number three, we were going to have four, but the Sun Metals were taking a free ride today for the subscribers. It's liquid. There's a big fund trying to buy stock in it. So why not mitigate all your risk as a subscriber and see what the drill bits find for free? It really is what I call smart speculation. So you'll get all the research part of that, but when they sign up, they're not just going to get the three stock picks that they can buy now and following the tranche pricing, because the prices are where I'm buying them now. But more importantly, it's how to use my newsletter. There's kind of like a starter's guide, because truthfully, you're probably going to be overwhelmed with the content on the site. Every month I publish somewhere between 20 and 30 pages of research. Sometimes there may be multiple issues between months if I find that the markets may need an update, or our price target gets hailed, or if there's a take a profits or sell a position. So there's a how to use this newsletter guide, which explains my tranche concept and how to buy and how to sell. Also, you know, where do you go to buy these stocks? Do you use a full service broker or a discount online broker? I talk about the pros and cons of each. So they'll get the how to use the guide, the top three, and instant access to everything I've written up in the history of the firm, and all the videos too.
Marin, let's move on to January in Vancouver. We had hoped to get you to come and speak at our Macro Voices live event at the Hyatt. Unfortunately, you had to decline because you are one of the major sponsors of the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference, and your counteroffer was to very generously give all of our attendees at Macro Voices live free passes to come to VRIC, which most of us are intending to do. I'm actually speaking on a couple of panels there myself. Looking forward to that. Give us a little bit of perspective on what VRIC is and what people can expect to find there when they get there.
So it's the largest conference for junior mining and mid-tiers in the world. It was started over 30 years ago by the Martin family. So Joe Martin started it. His son, Jay Martin, took it over about 4 or 5 years ago. And I don't know if you know this also, but I'm a partner with them on the Vancouver Resource Investment Show, so VRIC. So I get involved in who speaks at the show, hence why you and Patrick are talking at the show. And I love bringing controversy. Like, I'm not just about pushing what I believe. I like being challenged. So you'll see my buddies like Grant Williams and Doug Casey and Rick Rule, all the different guys I bring up on stage. And we'll challenge each other because, you know, Grant and I had the great debate on why he thought the U.S. dollar was going down. And I said, no, man, it's going up. And then you get to see that in live form, different people's opinions. These are all smart people, and see where it goes. So this show, you're going to have 6 different workshops with many, many well-known speakers. And then in the big room, like the big main hall, you'll be on stage. I'll be moderating you and Peter Schiff and a few other people. So it'll be fun. So, you know, and there's a lot of guys that I don't agree with, and I'll challenge them in front of everyone because I think our styles are pretty same, Eric. We say what we think. I don't tolerate bullshit very much on stage, and I call people out on their calls. You know, you can't just be a gold bull for 35 years because you'd be broke, right? So,
Some people are. They manage anyway.
Yeah, and I just don't understand how they do it. And so, you know, if a guy's been right once every 25 years, how long can he milk that for? So you won't see any of these paid newsletter writers at my show. I'm a big believer in skin in the game. And look, it's not like everything I do is perfect. I've got lots of losses on my track record, but I move along and I wear those losses with my subscribers. So the key is try to find the best ideas and submerge yourself with the best minds in the business. So that's what I tried to do. At the show, you'll see many geologists talking, engineers talking about feasibility studies and what they mean and what to look out for. We also do a cool thing on the Sunday night, something I'd love to share with your people. They may not know what we do, but we induct someone who's done something excellent in the industry, and they get inducted into the Resource Hall of Fame, where everyone at the show, we open up the bar, and they get to drink and listen to how did he get into the Hall of Fame? What was it about his career? And this January, we're inducting an individual who's built 5 copper mines throughout his career. Now, to build 1 copper mine is an achievement. To build 5 major copper mines, and then he's going to walk through how he did it. So if you have a chance, I know it's a Sunday, and you know most people are going to be watching the playoffs, but do your portfolio a favor and come out, and hopefully you'll be at least educated and hopefully entertained.
Well, fantastic. I look forward to seeing you there. Meanwhile, Patrick Ceresna and I will be back as Macro Voices continues right here at macrovoices.com.
Macro Voices is a listener-driven program. Please email requests for specific future interview guests to requests@macrovoices.com. You can email questions for the program to mailbag@macrovoices.com, and we'll answer them on the air from time to time in our mailbag segment. We also welcome your suggestions for how we can improve the program. Now, back to your hosts, Eric Townsend and Patrick Ceresna.
Eric, it was great to have Marin back onto the show. So looking forward to seeing him again out in Vancouver. It's going to be a great time, both at Macro Voices Live, which I'm looking forward to meeting so many of our listeners, but also for going to the Resource Show and seeing Marin there. So what did you think of the interview?
You know, what really struck out to me, it's interesting, Marin is buying now, but, you know, he's just following a process of starting to average in. And I'm doing the same thing. I've been accumulating long-dated calls on crude oil. Marin is trading the stocks. I tend to trade the commodities directly. So for me, it's been calls on long-dated crude oil futures. He's starting to average into the oil stocks. But you know, I don't think we're at the bottom yet, and I think Marin felt the same way. We've got lower to go here. It's going to be very interesting. I really agree with his view on gold, and you know, we've both been kind of proven wrong, at least in the short term, for the last several weeks. So I'm sticking to my guns on this. I think there's plenty of room for gold to break here and for this to be it and to move back down before this is over. I could be wrong because I've definitely been surprised by it. So it's going to be really interesting to see what comes next. I want to get, though, to where I think we're headed economically, which is we're seeing a lot of recession signals. We talked a little bit about steel in this interview. I want to get to copper and a number of other things. So let's go to your chart book. Listeners, you'll find that linked in your Research Roundup email. If you're not subscribed yet, just go to our homepage at macrovoices.com. Click the red button that says looking for the downloads. Patrick, at page two of the chart book, you've got an equity update for us on the S&P 500. What's going on here?
Well, chart two actually is not an update. That's going back to December 6th from our last chart book. And what I was trying to highlight here was we were trading back around just under 2,700 at the time. And I was talking about measured moves on the technically as to where the S&P could go if it was to break to lower lows. And we measured out down to more or less 2,500 and then 2,400 on the downside. And what was interesting is I got a number of comments from some people that were listening, like, you really believe it could go to 2,400. But it was just amazing to just see the magnitude of that selling in December, wasn't it? It was just relentless selling, wasn't it, Eric?
Yeah, I think that the Christmas Eve event had to do with people running stops and thin liquidity. I think that it was pretty easy to see that there was a bounce coming after that. And I won't be surprised if it carries us forward for several weeks to come.
Right. And so on page three was where I then overlaid the existing price action over those two measured targets. And clearly the market on that final day did that big blow off to the downside. This is a 4-hour chart. So it was a couple of 4-hour candles that blew past that 2390 lower target. But we then have that bounce, that 1000 Dow point up day on the markets, and the dead cat bounce is underway. And one of the things that I wanted to just kind of touch on is what to expect next. And one thing that I thought was particularly interesting and noteworthy to point out is that while I suspect that low that we've established here in January is likely to hold for maybe even several months. While I'm bearish, I'm in your camp that I believe that the stock market is in a bear market, and over a bear market, we're bound to make lower lows at some future point. But I believe that there's a good chance that January and maybe even February will have their lows contained there. But what's interesting is that if you go through the last four kind of market events where we had one of these liquidity washouts in the stock market that happens in a couple of days, once that short-term low happens, we've seen on numerous occasions, on actually all four occasions, the market retests the low in some form or another over the next month. Now, in some cases, like the days after the February vol event, a double bottom retest was there within 4 or 5 trading sessions. But in situations like after the April low that was established earlier this year, we just went and kind of retested the low. Almost, it wasn't a full double bottom. It was a little bit higher, but it retested a whole month later. And so what I really wanted to get across is that just because we probably seen the low doesn't mean that the market isn't going to spend many weeks probably establishing a base along these previous lows, and that we could get a little bit of chop in here before there's any kind of a legitimate bounce.
Patrick, let's move on to the 10-year yield on page four.
Right. And I just really put this chart up just to really hammer home the point that you were talking about in the pregame or the market wrap, where we were talking about just this extraordinary move. Like, we saw those yields double top around 3.25%, and it's just been a relentless drop in yields to the downside. I mean, we've broken that established trading range where around that 275, 280 level, where all of the key lows of 2018 came in. I mean, we have to go back to late 2017 to see yields at levels where we're currently trading. And so it's really interesting to see where bond traders, do you, by the way, Eric, think that this is a squeeze of some sort? Too many people just short yields at this stage? What's your thinking on that?
I think the acceleration that we've seen in the last week or so is a result of a squeeze. I think that the shorts are getting kicked out, but I think there's more to it than that. I don't think this is just the kind of squeeze that kind of tricks people out of their trade and then retraces and reverses. I think that what we're seeing here is economic signals that are very real. Usually, there's always two sides to every argument. You can make the bull case and you can make the bear case, but just look at what we've seen here with the equity market keeps surprising both of us. You and I both were very quick to say, yeah, we do think that the bear market is on. But look, it's oversold. It's time for a bounce. And at every turn, when we say that, yeah, okay, it gets more oversold. It doesn't bounce nearly as much as we expected. You look at the 10-year yield here, and it's plunging on page 4. If we move on to page 5, gold is moving up even when the dollar isn't, which is telling us that there's a safe haven trade going on. And as we get on to copper, which is coming up later in this, we'll see copper is falling off a cliff. Where's the good news in this story? Where do you even begin to make a bullish argument? It really says to me that we're getting signals, macro signals from all different asset classes telling us the same thing, which is this economy is in a lot more trouble than most people thought it was.
I couldn't agree more. It really is a situation where I think there was this one eureka moment where the market participants said, well, you know, they've been all saying, well, eventually this will come. But it seems like everyone all woke up one morning and said, holy cow, the business cycle's turning and my portfolio is not positioned for this. And suddenly everybody's off to the races to make their adjustments. Anyway, I wanted to pull up that chart on gold. So on page 5, I put up just a chart on gold. And what was particularly interesting to me on gold is I've heard so many different people come up with the 1290 level on gold from different sources. So like first started off with Charlie McElligott many weeks ago was talking about the CTA pivot around that 1290 level, give or take. But I've heard a number of different strategists talk about 1290. To me, 1290 is important because it's the 61.8 Fib retrace off of the from the previous sell-off. But what's interesting here is that in my mind, if gold is going to do a pullback the way Marin Katusa suggested in the interview, I would be highly suspicious of it failing here. But if gold continues this breakout above 1290, and we haven't had an update from Charlie in a while on that level. We should get him back on the show sometime soon to sort of see where his thinking is on that. But in my mind, if we beat 1290, there could be a liquidity surge that drives us to the 2018 highs, which is all around that 1350, 1360 levels, or 1370, sorry. And once we get up there, I'd find it hard pressed to see gold go all the way back to 1180. So, you know, for Marin Katusa's kind of scenario, I'd want to see gold reject about this 1290 level, and then maybe a retest of those lows would be something I could see. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I guess as I heard you describing that, the one caveat that comes to my mind is if you think about what happened in 2008 when panic really struck, gold was immediately moving up. I could easily see us getting to about that, you know, 2018 high level, 1360, 1400 in there somewhere before you get to the point where gold starts selling off with everything else because everybody's selling everything that isn't nailed down in order to raise cash. Now, that's if we get into a real crash kind of situation. We don't have those kind of market conditions yet. But look at all these indicators that we just talked about, and we'll get to copper in just a second, that are really telling us, hey, you know, something's up here. So I don't know.
There's no denying that in 2008, when the real liquidity event occurred in September, that gold got hammered from, I'm rounding, from $1,000 down to $700 an ounce during that sell-off. But what doesn't sit well with me with that narrative is the fact that in the 2 years prior to the peaks in 2008, gold was up several hundred percent. I mean, it was ripping from the $400-$500 an ounce level and then rips to 1,000. And then it pulls back to 700. But the last 7 years of gold have been a bear market, and gold's been consolidating. It didn't have this massive rise that was being checked. I don't think gold is going to have as big of a drop. I mean, listen, we don't know the severity of a liquidity event. And I guess if the correlation of all assets can go to one, if there's truly a liquidity event. But I actually don't know if I subscribe to the view that gold's going to get super hammered this time around.
Let's move on to crude oil on page 6. You're showing here, it looks like, you know, we did just test a bottom, and I agree with you. If I look at that range, it seems like it could be over here. I'm not dismissing that possibility. What do you think? I'm still leaning toward the possibility that we've still got lower to go.
Right. And I don't think that that's the conclusion I wanted to draw on this chart. So for our listeners that don't have the chart in front of them, what I did was here, I put the volume by price levels, which shows that on the weekly charts going back over the last 5 years, that there was a major consolidation of oil in this, so let's say, $42 to $52 range. And what was interesting was that even in spite of spot prices back in 2015 going into 2016 dropping to $26 a barrel, the majority of the term structure of oil was very much in the mid-40s. And oil had a very solid base here. And so we ripped down to what I view over the last 5 years to be a very important established support line. Now, that in itself doesn't make me interested in buying it. To me, it's just maybe the downside risk is not remotely as severe anymore as when you owned it up in the 60s and 70s. But that doesn't necessarily make it outright bullish. But what my view here, I think, even if we see spot prices drop down below 40, which Marin and yourself might be right, I think that the term structure and longer-term oil is not going much lower here. What do you think of that view?
I think you're probably right there. Even in when we saw $26 oil, that was with super steep contango, and the back end of the curve never really got substantially below 48 or so. And we're already very close to that. So it'll be very interesting to see. But, you know, if you want to know where this market might be headed in terms of what macro signals we're seeing, let's move on to page number 7. Look at that break in copper. I mean, Dr. Copper is sending a pretty strong message here.
Right. And this is a weekly chart on copper futures. And one of the interesting observations was that this kind of $2.50 to $3 range, I'm just rounding, was the most recent consolidation zone in copper. And we had a pretty nasty break this week in copper prices heading to a major consolidation level. And if we break lower from here, we haven't yet broken the major support around $2.50. But what will be interesting is that if we do, that ushers in a window that opens up back to the 2016 lows near $2 on copper. And would that not be the biggest advertisement of a global economic slowdown if we saw the copper prices follow through on this?
Well, Patrick, I couldn't agree more, and it's not just copper. It's bond yields, it's stocks, it's everything else. We're seeing across the board signs that 2019 is likely to be a very tumultuous year. In any event, I want to move on. You have just published your 2019 predictions for Big Picture Trading members. For anyone who's not a member of Big Picture Trading, you can sign up for a free 7-day trial and gain access to Patrick's 2019 market predictions. Slide 8 in the slide deck tells you how to do that. In case you don't have the slide deck, just go to bigpicturetrading.com and look for the 7-day free trial on Patrick's services. Folks, we need your help promoting Macro Voices, so please tell your friends and colleagues about Macro Voices, forward your research roundup emails, and most importantly, sign up for your free account at macrovoices.com. It only takes a minute, and we're never going to spam you or sell you anything. What we will do is send you our free research roundup email each week, which never contains advertising or marketing. It's just a list of links to all of the best stuff that we could find free on the internet each week. Patrick, tell them what's in this week's research roundup.
Well, this week you're going to find the transcript for today's interview with Marin, as well as a link to the Katusa report on Uranium Royalty Corp. There's also the chart book that Eric and I discussed in the postgame. There's an interesting article from Jeffrey Snyder titled Mispriced Illusions, and a great story on why global liquidity crashed again. So you'll find this and so much more in this week's Research Roundup. So that does it for this week's episode. We appreciate all the feedback and support we get from our listeners. And we're always looking for suggestions on how we can make the program even better. Now, for those of our listeners that write or blog about the markets and would like to share that content with our listeners, send us an email at researchroundup@macrovoices.com or tag it with the MVRR hashtag on Twitter, and we will include it in our weekly distributions. If you have not already, follow our main Twitter account at MacroVoices for all the most recent updates and releases. You can also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric S. Townsend and myself at Patrick Ceresna. On behalf of Eric Townsend and myself, thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Macro Voices is made possible by sponsorship from BigPictureTrading.com. the Internet's premier source of online education for traders. Please visit BigPictureTrading.com for more information. Please register your free account at MacroVoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the Internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free listener discussion forums and research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. You can email questions for the program to mailbag@macrovoices.com, and we'll answer your questions on the air from time to time in our mailbag segment. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts Eric Townsend and Patrick Ceresna shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices. Macro Voices is made possible by sponsorship from BigPictureTrading.com and by funding from Fourth Turning Capital Management, LLC. For more information, visit MacroVoices.com.